are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Monday, March 26, 2018. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, millions march for our lives nationwide as the NRA attacks and Remington enters bankruptcy. Meanwhile, China launches tariffs, but a quiet solution perhaps in works. U.S. and EU expel scores of Russian diplomats in wake of the nerve agent attack in the UK. And Stormy Daniels seems to be the least of Trump's problems as his lawyers all head for the exits.
None of you remind me of my daughter.
Your weekly reminder that ICE must be abolished. And two bills that don't do what they want you to think they do. Meanwhile, another Pennsylvania Republican to retire as Supreme Court hears another gerrymander case. And special elections matter. Voting rights expand edition. Meanwhile, how much trouble is Roger Stone in now that we know that Guccifer is GRU? Free college moving moderate is job guarantee next. And lastly, elections matter part two. Middle East civilian deaths soar under Trump. All this and more on today's program. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, another Monday. Hope that you had a restful weekend, or perhaps one that was not completely restful, that you got out in protest like millions of Americans across the country did. In New York, there was tons of people up on the Upper West Side that marched downtown. It occurred to me the rally, the speeches, were held maybe a block from the Trump Tower up at Columbus Circle. One wonders if that was by accident or not. But nevertheless, it depends on who you talk to. There's no official count of how many people were out there. In Washington, D.C., according to a Virginia-based firm, which uses a proprietary method for calculating crowd size using aerial photos, there were over 200,000 people in D.C. The organizers put the list at closer to 800,000 people. DDIS, that same group, put the Women's March at 440,000. That was supposedly the biggest ever. Largest single-day demonstration in the U.S., and I'm not clear that that number of 440,000 is the number they're going on here. This is unclear, but there was I have no way of estimating in New York City, but 100,000, I have no idea. But around the country, one would imagine a million folks. And the impressive thing about it, of course, a lot of young people. And very hard to assess the implications of something like this in its moment, right? Much easier as you look back in retrospect. There's a lot of people who are comparing this level of involvement with the youth to the Vietnam War. And when we protested against the Iraq War, it was an all-voluntary military. And so for the beyond the vast majority of people who were protesting a policy that ostensibly did not directly implicate their lives in a mechanical fashion. My daughter's school 2 days ago had a lockdown drill. So when these students go out and protest, they are mechanically, materially impacted by this gun violence. So we see a lot of students who are going out there, and I think that is, you know, the primary driver of the comparison. It's that the anti-Vietnam protests, anti-Vietnam War protests, were at the very least in part a function of the fact that a lot of 16, 17-year-old, 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds, 20-year-olds, 21, 22-year-olds, 23-year-olds were contemplating the idea of like going and actually fighting the war. So they had that added incentive. The depth of their commitment was perhaps greater. And people are making that parallel here too, because these students are reminded on a fairly regular basis that their lives hang in the balance. So we're going to play some clips from the marches. We're going to play some other clips of just stupid right-wingers trying to justify this stuff. Before we do, you'd never turn down free money, right?
Oh, no, of course not.
I wasn't even asking you because I knew that was the case. Well, right. If you shop online with the without the best coupons, you're already paying too much. Are you aware of this?
God damn it.
There's a free browser extension called Honey that automatically finds the best coupons on the web, so you always get the best prices on everything. Now, I'm not breaking any news here to tell you that I am a little bit on the frugal side. And literally one of the first things I taught Myla, because she's a big like Brandy Melville. That's where she likes to buy stuff. And I tell her whenever she buys online, you've got to search to see if there's a coupon, because there almost always is. And I would go to like Retail Me Not, but that thing has become crap now, to find coupons. Because like, why wouldn't you take 30 seconds, 50 seconds, a minute to save $10? Well, unfortunately, that whole system has fallen apart, because it's now now the websites are trying to pull you in. That's what's awesome about the Honey. In two clicks, you can add to any browser for free and then shop like you normally do. Honey scans and tests millions of coupons in the background. At checkout, Honey will automatically apply the best coupon to get you the biggest discount. It's like free shipping or $10 off or whatever it is. Over 7 million people use Honey every day, and together they've saved millions of dollars. When Honey's got your back, you'll never overpay for anything again. The last thing I bought online was from Kohl's. I like that place. Herb Kohl was, I think it came from his family. He was a great senator from Wisconsin. Kohl's has, I'm not doing an ad for Kohl's, but it has completely not terribly crazy stylish clothing, but perfect for my look. So, like, I'll get a shirt from there, or I'll get a towel. That's the way I roll. I don't know how much I saved. I can't remember. But it was like 10, 15 bucks. I don't know. It's, you know what it was? It was like, if I saw 10 or 15 bucks on the floor, would I bend over to pick it up? You bet I would.
Oh, yeah.
And now I don't even have to bend.
That's good. A lot safer.
It actually, I see it on the floor, it pops up into my pocket. That's what Honey's about. There's no reason not to add Honey to your browser today. It's free. It takes just seconds to install, and it will save you tons of money. Add Honey to your browser for free right now at joinhoney.com/majority. That's joinhoney.com/majority. Check it out. All right, let's start the sound before we get to There's two clips we have of students, young people, that I think are important to check out. But what's been fascinating is watching the right deal with the idea of hundreds of thousands of students protesting something. They can't attack. They try and attack these students. They send Ben Shapiro out there, and he's trying to, his big argument is, just because you are a victim of gun violence, just because you're subjected to differences in your schooling, like a lockdown drill, or like students are afraid, or the potential of your teachers having to go get guns, or the idea that they're going to have to, that people who are trained to go in and educate have to be trained to carry a weapon and take out a perp. Just because of that does not mean that you have a right to speak out. Ben Shapiro, whose whole profession is dedicated to speaking out, and I don't know exactly how he earned that ability. But they're sending out, and they're so desperate for any line of, like, to parry this onslaught from students. They send out Rick Santorum, and boy, oh boy, are you desperate when you got to send out Rick Santorum. This is how dumb it gets.
This is the bottom line. Is this a political effort? Is this a political movement? Very well, maybe, and that's fine. I mean, if the organizers, people who certainly supported it, the Hollywood elites and the liberal billionaires who funded this, it's all about politics. Is this really all about politics, or is it all about keeping our schools safe? Because it is about keeping our schools safe. Then we have to have much broader discussion than the discussion that's going on right now. How about kids, instead of looking to someone else to solve their problem, do something about maybe taking CPR classes or trying to deal with...
Pause it. Now, wait a second. So last week they're telling us, hey, just because they're victims doesn't mean that they have the right to talk about gun violence. And now they're flipping this on their head and saying, oh, instead of just talking about it, why don't they actually go out and learn CPR so that when their buddies are shot, maybe as they're sitting there in a pool of their own blood, they could practice CPR and save a life. Think of how both just demented and insane you have to be that this is your number one talking point. If we're really talking about keeping schools safe, why aren't students out there learning how to take a bullet? Why aren't they learning how to catch bullets or CPR? Or why not teach them trauma surgery? That way they can, in their school, they can learn trauma surgery. They could take the bullets out of their classmates as the bullets go in.
The nanny state will not always be there to protect you. But
all right,
you don't
roll
care.
Back so that people can hear this insanity again.
Discussion than the discussion that's going on right now. How about kids, instead of looking to someone else to solve their problem, do something about maybe taking CPR classes or trying to deal with situations that where there is a violent shooter that you
can
actually
respond to. How are they
looking
at other people? I would ask you. They took action.
Yeah, they took action to ask someone to pass a law. They didn't take action to say, how do I, as an individual, deal with this problem? And this is the bottom line. Is this a political...
I don't know what to say. Oh, the action they took yesterday, the action they took was inappropriate, and they just aren't qualified to protest. Well, what the real problem is, they're not qualified to do trauma surgery.
God forbid a little thing called personal responsibility, old lesbian face.
A number of surgeons have pointed out that CPR isn't necessarily the most helpful thing with gun wounds.
Well, watch MacGyver. Learn how to take a bullet out. Stop being a pussy. These kids want to march everywhere. Meanwhile, they get shot up. They're like sitting duck. It's pathetic. School shooters are the only ones that have any ingenuity now these days.
Folks. I don't know if you're hiring. Every business needs great people. The last time we did our hiring around here, I used ZipRecruiter. They didn't even know that. I don't even know if they knew that I used it. I mean, I've been advertising for them. I had used the interface just to check it out, but I had never used it to actually look for people. And I have to say, I was blown away. I was blown away. We had 150. I don't know what percentage of them were honestly great fits, but I interviewed maybe 20 people out of there. And I honestly think that any of those 20 would have been great. We ended up going with Brendan, and then he ends up taking a couple of weeks off to go on some type of peyote retreat to find himself, but he'll be back after vacation. But ZipRecruiter knew there was a smarter way to do online recruiting. So they built a platform. It finds the right job candidates for you, and in my case, me. ZipRecruiter learns what you're looking for, identifies people with the right experience, invites them to apply to your job. People told me that was the thing that was amazing about it. It went out and found people. These invitations have revolutionized how you find your next hire. In fact, 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate through the site in just one day. ZipRecruiter doesn't stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applications you receive so you never miss a great match. The right candidates are out there. ZipRecruiter is how you find them. Businesses of all sizes trust ZipRecruiter for their hiring needs. Right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Honestly, I've said this before, the best time to look is when you don't need anybody, so you're not under a tremendous amount of pressure. So check it out. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/majority. That's ZipRecruiter.com/majority. ZipRecruiter.com/majority. It is the smartest way to hire. And lastly, last week, I did a double shot. I did Ari Melber's show at 6 p.m., and then I did an 8 p.m. Chris Hayes.
Nice.
I thought I was just going to do Ari's show because I had pneumonia. I hadn't been out all week. I was like, oh, I do a quick one. I get to bed early. And because of the whole John Bolton thing, they held me there. But any opportunity to crap on John Bolton on national television, I will take. But the real point is, you know, basically the only time I shave is when I'm getting the almost implicitly to paid for to shave. And there's only one blade I use. Well, there's actually five blades, but it's in one cartridge. Harry's founders knew that a great shave comes down to great blades made with sharp, durable steel that lasts. That's why they make some of the highest quality blades in the world, priced much lower than the leading brand, and they'll even give you a full refund if you don't love your shave. You just got to let them know within 30 days. If you haven't figured it out, if it takes you 28 days to know if you like the shave, you're a little bit indecisive, or you're just out of touch with your face. Harry stands behind the quality of their blades. They know switching razors isn't an easy decision. People get attached to these things. They've created a $13 value set. Comes with everything you need for a close, comfortable shave, a weighted ergonomic handle, a five-blade razor with lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, a travel blade cover. You can claim yours now by going to harrys.com/majority report. In other words, you're sitting there with your razor, you're paying God knows how much for this thing. Harry's is giving you an opportunity to trade up, but for a less expensive shave. So $13, an investment that down the road could save you hundreds of dollars a year. Yep. You know, with me, the thing I love most about the Harry's is that it's just not as expensive as those old razors, and it comes to my door. So it feeds
I
both
like
my
fewest,
laziness.
Fewest cuts ever.
Is that right?
Yep. Very clean shave.
I finally convinced Sean to use it to shave, and the results are very nice.
Oh, is he shaving now? You finally got him to shave?
Well, sporadically.
All right.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to do it.
Now our listeners can redeem their trial set at harrys.com/majority report. Make sure you go to Harry's, harrys.com/majority report to redeem your offer. Let them know I sent you to help support the show. These guys hung with us through that whole... I see this thing. So, all right. let's get to some of these. There's two clips. I mean, honestly, if you want to feel inspired by the next generation, I would recommend you go to YouTube and just search some of these clips from the Our Lives Matter marches. What's that? March for Our Lives. Let's start with this clip, and then we'll go to Emma Gonzalez. This woman, also incredibly impressive. I don't know. I don't think she's a teenager. I don't know. But this is Tiffany Dina Lofton. She's from the NAACP's National Director for Youth and College Division. So she may be a college student. I don't know. Maybe a little bit older. But she's talking about the importance of intersectionality in the March for Our Lives. Because, and the Parkland students, I think, have been very sensitive about this, too. They're very smart, extremely smart, you know, I don't want to say kids, students. And they have acknowledged, to their credit, that much of what they're doing in terms of organizing and about leveraging their opportunity to speak to the media, they have learned from Black Lives Matter and from mirroring actions they have taken in the wake of violence against African Americans, particularly gun violence perpetrated by cops. I mean, this is, and we're, what, last week, another shooting. Death by...
You're talking about the one in San, yes, Sacramento.
Holding a cell phone. In his own yard. So you got to be super careful, folks. You got to show respect to the police officers as they come into your yard if you're holding a cell phone. Anyways, but here is Tiffany Dina Lofton at the march in Washington, D.C., pointing out the importance of intersectionality and the merging of all this this energy.
March for Our Lives on March 24, 2018. We're here for three important reasons. Number one, what they will not do is ignore Black voices. Number two, what they will make sure to do is include our agenda in the agenda for gun prevention reform. When we talk about legislative issues and solutions for gun violence, it has to include the intersections of Black violence. That means guns, that means gangs, that means schools, that means teachers, that means police brutality, that means state violence. It has to include all of that stuff if we're going to be able to do this together. This is not just about white people in school shootings in the classroom. They kill us in churches. They kill us on the streets. They kill us in the car. They kill us when we're traveling. And they kill us in our classroom. This is about all the young Black people that you look at right behind you. That's what this is about. It's not about none of this extra stuff with the concert. That's great. We're here to organize, represent, and show power. And the third thing that we're here to do is make sure we have a great time. We came from all across the entire country to be here for this specific moment because I want my people to feel empowered. And I want them to go back to the field and to know that when they get back to the local organizing, that's where it matters.
Just super encouraging to hear people on the ground with such a clear agenda and strategy. Just super encouraging. Here is one of the shooting survivors, Emma Gonzalez. She is now there. Of course, you know, the right wing is it's just. It's just unbelievable, but they're attacking her now. And one of the ways they're doing it, apparently there was a photo of her tearing up a target, you know, a gun shooting target. And that image has been doctored so that now it appears that she is tearing up a copy of the Constitution, right? Like how, this is how desperate and how terrified they are of the power of these students and these young people. They are unimpeachable as they exist in real life. So you've got to impeach them fraudulently. I mean, right. And maybe, you know, I don't know. Maybe for these people, a target range target is the equivalent of the Constitution, but I don't think so. I think this is clearly an attempt and an acknowledgement that they're losing. They are losing badly. Here is Emma Gonzalez speaking in D.C. She starts by acknowledging those people who have died.
6 minutes and about 20 seconds. In a little over 6 minutes, 17 of our friends were taken from us, 15 were injured, and everyone, absolutely everyone, in the Douglas community was forever altered. Everyone who was there understands. Everyone who has been touched by the cold grip of gun violence understands. For us, long, tearful, chaotic hours in the scorching afternoon sun were spent not knowing. No one understood the extent of what had happened. No one could believe that there were bodies in that building waiting to be identified for over a day. No one knew that the people who were missing had stopped breathing long before any of us had even known that a code red had been called. No one could comprehend the devastating aftermath or how far this would reach or where this would go. For those who still can't comprehend because they refuse to, I'll tell you where it went. Right into the ground, 6 feet deep. 6 minutes and 20 seconds with an AR-15, and my friend Carmen would never complain to me about piano practice. Aaron Feist would never call Kira Miss Sunshine. Alex Schachter would never walk into school with his brother Ryan. Scott Beagle would never joke around with Cameron at camp. Helena Ramsey would never hang out after school with Max. Gina Montalto would never wave to her friend Liam at lunch. Joaquin Oliver would never play basketball with Sam or Dylan. Elena Petty would never. Kara Lugren would never. Chris Hickson would never. Luke Hoyer would never. Marquin Duque Aguiano would never. Peter Wang would never. Alyssa Alhadaf would never. Jamie Guttenberg would never. Meadow Pollock would never.
So here she basically just stares out to the crowd, if you can't see it, if you're just listening, and waits. I think there were people who were just not clear what she was doing, and it was very moving. And then this happens.
Since the time that I came out here, it has been 6 minutes and 20 seconds. The shooter has ceased shooting and will soon abandon his rifle, blend in with the students as they escape and walk free for an hour before arrest. Fight for your lives before it's someone else's job.
It was pretty powerful stuff. And you know, I think this really, I don't know. In a year we'll have a better sense of what the implications of this are. But they don't seem to be going away. And it's not like there's not going to be more opportunities for these students to engage in this issue, right? Like, it's not like we're going to stop having mass shootings at schools.
I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is definitely the one where we know more about students who have been victims, now in this case turned to activists, than the person who perpetuated the shooting, right? I mean, that's a shift right there.
Yeah, and I think, it's the first one in this era of social media and a more politicized era, frankly.
Much more politicized.
Where high school students have been subjected to us on this level.
It's funny you say that, Michael, though, because this is also one of the school shooters where he was a Trump supporter and had swastikas on.
Right.
And didn't kill himself and is alive or didn't get shot. Right. So, like I said earlier, they are desperate. The NRA is desperate, desperate to be able to figure out how to push back. And this one was, the lack of shame is just sort of stunning. So there's, as you know, the NRA has their own TV network because that's how valuable a resource. That's how much money is made from these weapons that their trade association would create an entire organization to just sort of like a TV network to promote essentially gun violence, right? And one of their hosts is this guy, Colloin Noir. And he is, I guess, the sort of, I don't know. See, he's trying to bring in the hip hop quality to the NRA based on it's. And so here is his argument about why we're not hearing the full story from the Parkland students.
I want to acknowledge the heroism and bravery of Blaine Gaskill, the Maryland school resource officer who stopped the mass shooter in his tracks and saved the lives of every innocent kid in that school. To all the kids from Parkland getting ready to use your First Amendment to attack everyone else's Second Amendment at your march on Saturday, I wish a hero like Blaine had been at Marjorie Douglas High School last month, because your classmates would still be alive and no one would know your names, because the media would have completely and utterly ignored your story the way they ignored his.
All right, pause it. Let's talk about Blaine Gaskill for a moment, right? This is a guy who is supposedly the example that should be set. This is when it works. When the school security guard goes in and shoots the shooter. And it worked. It worked. Austin Wyatt Rollins went into a school called Great Mills High School and shot two people, a 14-year-old male and a 16-year-old girl, his former girlfriend. Gaskill just after Rollins shot the two students, Blaine Gaskill responded, confronted him. Incidentally, he's also SWAT. He's a member of his local SWAT team. Gaskill fired one shot at Rollins. Rollins fired at the same time. Rollins was severely injured in the exchange and was later declared dead. Officials praised Gaskill's quick response. Oh, just in case you're wondering what success looks like, the 16-year-old girl, Jaylen Wiley, died on Thursday of last week. That's what success looks like in the NRA world. A SWAT member who also happens to be the local resource guy responds within 1 minute, takes out the perp. I should say 1 minute after he's able to kill at least one of his victims. That's success. So not the end of guns being taken into classrooms, not the end of lockdown drills, not the end of someone estimated 180,000 students over the past 10 years has been subjected to a mass shooting in their school. Not the end of that experience, not the end of worrying about the potentiality of that experience, not the end of at least one person dying, but that we will ultimately shoot the perpetrator if we have that SWAT member in every team, in every school across the country. That's how sick these people are and how desperate they are. That's what they're championing as the system working. That's when the system works, folks. Only one dead.
Well, it goes back to what our guest was saying last week, right, about the neoliberal desire to shift responsibility from society onto individuals.
Of course.
That is following this logic to its conclusion.
And make no mistake about it, we are shifting the burden of these gun manufacturers' profits onto our students. That's how effed up this is. You're going to pay with your lack of sense of security in your schools for our profits. Period. End of story. That's it. That is it.
Should point out, Killer Mike had to apologize for an interview he did with Noir about black ownership of guns this weekend because it was used as a counter of the March of Our Lives, and Killer Mike said he's not against that, but it was an ill-advised interview request to grant, I think.
Yeah, I'm not sure everybody's, you know, you can expect everybody to be on top of every interview they do in that respect, but good for him for coming out and apologizing and denouncing it. All right, I want to just talk about a couple of quick stories here that I wanted to just touch base on. Right now, as you know, Trump announced some tariffs on steel the other day. China announced on Friday a plan to impose tariffs on $3 billion worth of American-produced fruit, pork, wine, and seamless steel pipes. The fruit's going to impact California. The pork could very well really hurt Nebraska. There's a whole nother suite of stuff that China could launch on in terms of tariffs. And apparently, though, this threat has brought the Mnuchin to the table, and they're now going to work it out. Like, Trump got his show, and now they're just going to work it out. And it's going to be the same thing, incidentally, with NAFTA. I mean, I haven't heard a lot come out of these negotiations, but I can tell you right now, if you were one of those idiots who thought, like, oh, Trump's going to renegotiate NAFTA, this is going to be great, get ready for everything that is no longer relevant about NAFTA to be rolled back, and everything that's atrocious about NAFTA to be hyper-atrociousized.
I mean, obviously it goes without saying that we said this at the time, but just really specifically, like the generic, he's opposed to NAFTA. Like when Bernie says he's opposed to NAFTA, he talks specifically about standards in countries like Mexico in terms of labor rights and the environment and protecting standards here in more developed countries. Trump basically just was like, you could easily read even what Trump was saying then as to be like, we just need to lower all of our standards. And that was obviously what was going to happen.
Exactly. Exactly. And we just, I want to get one or two products that I happen to get involved with that need to be a little bit cheaper. That's all.
Get rid of the minimum wage.
Yeah. At one point, he specifically said the minimum wage is too high.
Yeah.
Here.
He said that publicly.
Well, at the very least, he's going to get us into less wars. yeah, we will touch on that later. All right. Two bills I want to just flag for you. Last week, the House passed a right to try bill. This is something that libertarian callers have called in and talked to me multiple times. And what this is that, and I should tell you, of course, it is pushed by the Koch brothers and the Arizona-based Goldwater Institute. It would cut the FDA out of the approval process for drugs administered to terminal patients. On top of that, except for in extreme cases of negligence, it would bar the FDA from using any data from these experiments on terminally ill patients to enhance drug safety. So in other words, like, okay, and we'll talk in a moment about what qualifies for a terminally ill patient. But we're going to give this terminally ill patient this drug. Oh, it killed them the next day. The FDA is no longer, would not be allowed to record that in terms of future studies as to whether or not the drug was safe.
Fake trials.
Honestly, I'm not,
take it for a road test, say.
So if the drug sickens or kills the patient, the FDA is specifically barred from recording that fact.
Yeah, you're already sicker than a refugee when you tried it.
I love Jimmy Stewart, Koch brothers.
And the idea is that there's a lot of concern, as expressed in the New England Journal of Medicine, that you're going to extend this. You're going to go from terminal patients to chronically ill patients to just patients.
Try them, everybody. Who cares?
The measure would allow patients with irreversible terminal illnesses to try any drug that has passed its phase one clinical trials under FDA rules. Phase one is super. I want you to think of like a sieve. And then I want you to think of like just a iron bars. That's how wide you can pass through on phase one, right? Like, is it administrable? Okay, you've passed phase one. The bill would cover patients who are mortally ill or who have exhausted approved treatment options. Not clear what that means. Or who cannot participate in an FDA-approved clinical trial because participation is not feasible.
They're tired of doing human testing in Africa.
It's
That's
just,
what this means.
Yeah, honestly. Oh, also, here's the good news. Zero liability lawsuits.
Well, naturally.
For the manufacturers, sponsors, physicians, clinical investigators, and hospitals that participate in this existing expanded access program.
Bingo.
Everything's covered. Do you remember this reminds me?
Okay.
Do you remember that?
Sorry, we wanted it to cure your cancer, and what it ended up doing, make you bleed from every pore you have. Sorry.
Tomorrow he's going to be all better or all Look, not good.
He was all dead anyways. So.
Do you remember the woman who said, this was years ago, it's still one of my favorite libertarian moments, and you pulled out the Ralph Nader thing on her, the Pinto?
Yeah.
And she was like, yeah, but did they tell people that their gas tanks might blow?
The defense was the defense. It was like, hey, save a bunch of bucks.
Might literally get incinerated.
Might get incinerated.
Yeah, you know what? God damn it. Thanks for the deal. I love capitalism.
All right. One other bill that I want you to just be aware of. We did an interview on Ring of Fire about this, and maybe next week for the vacation week, maybe we'll play this interview. Just so that people can hear this a little bit more in depth. But there are two bills that ultimately will be reconciled as it comes through the House and the Senate. The Senate bill is called SESTA, Stop Enabling Sex Traffickers Act. The House bill is called FOSTA, Allow States and Victims to Fight Online Sex Trafficking Act, both of which sound like a good idea. They're structured slightly different, but SESTA would amend the Communications Decency Act, and FOSTA would affect the Mann Act in terms of cross-state prostitution. The idea is that you want to fight sex trafficking. People's perception of what sex trafficking is generally, too narrow. People perceive it as you've got underage women or girls essentially brought in from like a Eastern European country and, housed in some type of dormitory, I guess. That's part of it, but it is a far broader problem where you have people who are, it can be women who have no means of supporting their children. It can mean people who come into a town that, or maybe former runaways, or, I mean, there's a whole host of situations. women who are abused. And the theory here is we're going to shut down the means in which these sex traffickers are reaching their clientele. Ostensibly, they're, I guess, the traffickers, not the traffickees, are reaching the clientele for the traffickees. And thereby shutting down websites, shutting down publications. And the intent may be good, but the experts on this and the people who work in the in sex industry will tell you and have tell you and are trying to tell people this is a huge mistake. It's a huge mistake because all you're trying to, you're shutting down the marketing apparatus. It's not going to stop the sex trafficking. They're just going to find a different way of doing it. But what you're doing inadvertently is shutting down the means in which people who help people who are being sex trafficked locate them and determine what their situation is. That is the very sort of like slug line version. We're going to play an interview. We will play that interview over the next week and a half or so.
Yeah. It also takes away tools that sex workers use to keep themselves safe.
In terms of being able to track...
screen clients.
Right.
And talk to each other online and whatnot.
So this is just one of those things where it's like, it may be effective in making people think that there's no sex trafficking going on. But in fact, what it does is it really, it more than likely increases the sex trafficking and makes it much harder for investigators and... advocates to help. So I just wanted to put that on your radar because, you know, it's going to be another one of these sort of like bipartisan bills that are going to move through that everybody's very proud of themselves for getting through, but of course is a mile wide and an inch deep.
Yeah, I saw a lot of signs about it at the IWS a few weeks ago. This is something people are really upset about right now. A lot of
and of course, activists. Nobody, you know, if you're not a butt of a joke in the context of, you know, a Donald Trump saga, nobody cares about sex workers. And so they don't necessarily have an opportunity to provide the benefit of their experience in a, you know, when debating a bill like this. So, all right. Couple more things I want to just touch on. In Washington State, remember that that special election last fall? I can't remember which one it was, but there was a special election in Washington State. It turned the state Senate to a Democratic majority. Now, there's a lot of things that people complain about with Democrats that are perfectly legitimate complaints. And but here is one thing that I can say unequivocally. If there is any expansion of voting rights in any place at any time, necessarily it's because Democrats control the state or they have brought the court case there. You can assess for yourself as to whether or not what value that has. I imagine if you are part of a group that has been systematically had their vote disenfranchised, it's probably more important to you. But Jay Inslee, I guess it was just about a week ago now, signed a big election reform package called Access to Democracy, election day registration, automatic voter registration, that's done after your citizenship is checked. It just happens. It goes through the system automatically. Once you get your, you can either, maybe your license or maybe some other mechanism, pre-registration for 16 and 17-year-olds, and a state version of the National Voting Rights Act. So that's good news. Washington State, Oregon did same-day registration. or I should say, they implemented automatic voter registration. They had more than 270,000 new voters, had the highest turnout increase of any state in the last presidential election. Registration among voters of color increased by 26%. So this is a big deal. Studies have shown that 15 states with election day registration have seen voter turnout increase by as much as 10%. 10%. The ACLU right now is gathering signatures for a ballot initiative in Michigan to do election day registration, make it easier to cast a ballot. And New York State is getting close to passing early voting. Maybe Cuomo will lean on somebody now that he's feeling some heat. Florida, there'll be a referendum as to whether or not ex-felons should be re-enfranchised. Utah, Maryland, New Jersey, looking at automatic voting. Hawaii's passed vote by mail. There's a lot happening on the ground with expansion of voting rights in those states controlled by Democrats. Period. End of story. Florida, they managed to eke by a referendum. So that's good news. One other thing I wanted to tell you about. We didn't really talk about this, and it's worth noting. This story about Guccifer 2.0, we never got too deep into that stuff. I found it just overwhelming. I couldn't follow it. But Guccifer 2.0 was supposedly a lone hacker who had broken into the DNC servers. For a long time, we were told there was suspicion that it was a Russian operative that was poo-pooed by all the right people. There was no proof, and people should have been skeptical. But Roger Stone claimed to have a lot of involvement with Guccifer, whatever they call it, I don't know. But it turns out that Guccifer, you know, here's the thing. You're a GRU agent, right? This is the functional equivalent of, like, I guess the CIA, right? I don't know if they structured exactly the CIA, FBI. I don't know that they have the same bright lines about domestic and non-domestic spying in Russia. But you're in charge of hacking into this stuff, and apparently, like, they were afraid because they had left some clues about the hacking, so Guccifer showed up, claimed that he was the one who did it. You got one job. That is to go online, switch on your VPN, which is basically the way that you bypass certain nodes of the internet, so that it's very difficult to track you. And then you make your posts and you do your emails and you contact Roger Stone or whatever it is. One time, apparently, this GRU agent forgot to do it. Just logged on. And so there is essentially digital fingerprints all over this. I'll tell you why this is important. Because, and I think we've always speculated that the story is really going to be about money laundering. And to the extent that there was any collusion, it was because these guys are idiots and they had no idea who they were dealing with. Roger Stone had plenty of contact with this Guccifer. And when Sam Nunberg gets out there and says, I'm not going to implicate Roger Stone in this, he's aware that they're gunning for Stone, that Mueller's team is gunning for Stone. Stone has not been brought in by Mueller, incidentally. And I suspect that when Stone comes in, he's in big, big trouble. Knowingly, unknowingly, whatever he did. Colluding with someone who stole. I mean, look, here's the bottom line. If Stone knows Guccifer stole this stuff, you're still trafficking in stolen goods. So Roger Stone may be spending some time in jail or in the barrel, as he says. Because I don't look at Roger Stone and think, here's a guy who's willing to fall on the sword
spend the rest of his life in prison or even extended period of time because he's such a loyal guy.
He's not an idiot.
I don't get that. Of the many things that I get when I look at a Roger Stone.
You don't get undying loyalty.
I don't get like anybody other than Roger Stone. So this is going to be pretty interesting. And I imagine he's panicking right now. It's also going to be interesting to see, like, you know, sort of what is the flow of information? You know, I mean, clearly WikiLeaks was used to launder it, whether WikiLeaks was aware of it or not. But someone wanted to make sure that the information did not come from them. And it'll be interesting to find out who that person was. All right, we got plenty more to talk about in the fun half. I wanted to get those stories out there just because I have some like compulsive disorder. I don't really know.
That's correct.
We can't only talk about Stormy Daniels.
Oh, right. Well, you know.
Now we've earned the right to talk about Stormy Daniels.
That's right. And I think, you know, the Stormy Daniels thing, we're gonna play one clip just because we all laughed about very, very hard about it in the office. I still contend with Stormy Daniels, as I've had now for a couple months, that this is about Donald Trump, if there is proof. And she did not deliver proof last night of an affair. She just spoke about one. She claimed it. But if there is proof of an affair that comes out, video, pictures, I think there's a prenup payout. Now, people have made the point, and I think this is a legitimate point. If that's all it takes to blackmail Donald Trump. All right, so here's a story I heard.
Oh my God, she'll get Mar-a-Lago. What do you need?
Let me tell this story about Stormy Daniels. And I'm going to try and make sure that I do not. Okay, so I recently spoke to someone who's involved in show business. And Stormy Daniels, years ago, this is back in 06, was a guest on a show. I'm not going to give you any more details. This guy happened to be involved in the show in some capacity. Was in her dressing room. She was there with her assistant. He said she didn't even look up. He introduced himself. She said to her assistant, ask this guy, he'd know. So the assistant said, do you think Stormy could appear on Celebrity Apprentice? And the guy I know says, well, to be honest with you, probably not because it's network television. There's, you know, sponsors. I think it would probably be too racy. And she just looked at her assistant and said, you see, I told you. So clearly the assistant was saying, like, maybe you could get on there. And she's like, there's no way. So apparently the story goes, subsequent to this, someone else told me a story that NBC, who had a three-way split with Trump when it comes to revenue on the Celebrity Apprentice, Burnett got one-third, Trump got one-third, the network got one-third. They would have all these products on, right, that they would push in each episode. You know, here's Juicy Fruit. Go out and sell Juicy Fruit gum. And whoever can sell the most packets in, you know, Times Square wins or something. Some stupid thing like that.
Is it really that bad?
I don't know. And so they had to, NBC, come up with a calculation of how much money it would cost to have Stormy Daniels on the show. How much money would be lost? And they came up with the calculation. It was something like $7 million.
Yep.
And apparently they gave it to Trump in a document. They made a document that basically just probably said three things. Like
got the document.
Probably just literally said, line one, you, line two, will lose, Line three, $7 million.
Money.
And he just took the paper, crumpled it up, and said, okay, fine. What's next?
All right. Message received.
What? And I'll tell you what's interesting to me about this is that, like, $7 million, too steep a price. This is a billionaire, supposedly, right? We're to believe this guy's a
quote-unquote billionaire.
A billionaire, yeah. Right? And it's like, I don't know what $7 million is to a billionaire. I would imagine it's somewhere like around, for like me, like $500. I don't know. I have no idea how to calculate this. But it leads me to believe that if he's got a $50 million payout, because there's evidence of him sleeping with another woman that goes public, he's going to expend a lot of money and a lot of concern and not compare. I mean, this is
a lot. Especially, yeah. I mean, of course, because he also likes the public reputation of being out, sleeping with a bunch of women anyways. I mean, it has to be what it's about.
It has to be what it's about. And because look, what further damage could she do to him politically? Nothing.
None.
Zero.
I wonder. I think this doesn't make any difference with his base, obviously. But I just think if this probably on the margins, when you talk about just voter enthasm, there's probably a few people that are
maybe,
just
but they're not. They're not sitting around thinking about that.
Mm-mm.
If anything,
not at all.
Proves he's actually had sex,
which shocks me.
He's not a virgin.
That totally blows my theory.
But here's the other thing. The only other thing I will say in terms of its broader relevance. Because at the end of the day, I don't care if he owes Melania $50 million. I don't think there's enough money.
Don't even put it out there.
But it also shows that and I think this is what's going on right now. Stormy Daniels' attorney, the reason why she's not showing up with evidence is because Stormy Daniels' attorney is basically saying to the Trump people, $130,000 is just not enough.
I didn't run for president.
You got to be talking five.
I didn't run for president to keep having to borrow money from the friggin' Gambino family. What the hell? Totally unfair.
But here's the point. If he can be blackmailed by Stormy Daniels or by beauty contestant number B, number four or whatever it is, or Playboy model, C or whatever it is, if he can be blackmailed by them with this stuff, the P tape is relevant not because of the PP, right? The P tape is relevant because it's going to cost him money.
I don't get it. I don't need to be extorted or coerced. Just offer me a bribe. Why is everybody so mean? I'm willing to do literally anything for a tie contract.
Right.
Why do you have to put me in a corner? And I don't do due diligence. I say, $70,000. You're hot. You remind me of my daughter. Want to have sex? And then I say, by the way, you're not trying to ruin my prenup, right? And they say, thank you and no. And then we have a date. What's the problem?
Also possible that the whatever she has on him will make the P tape more believable.
That's also possible.
No. Not her. Because she said in the interview last night they only had sex once.
That's
encounter
right.
Encounter that they described. So that's it.
That's right.
Well, does peeing on someone count as sex?
But I just don't think. But I just don't think that she went in there with a video.
Yeah, I don't know. She basically said that there was one other time they were together, and he tried to move on her like a bitch, and it didn't work.
Right.
I don't mean that she has a P tape. I mean that whatever they did will make it seem more believable.
She would have talked about it last night.
Yeah. No.
Oh, okay.
No, that's it.
That's the thing. Is that a lot of people have had that same theory, but I don't think that's it. I think it's proof of, who knows what she has that could be proof.
She could be holding stuff back.
Blue dress.
Yeah.
Right?
Ew.
Here's an envelope. These are the results of the test that we took on the dress she was wearing that day. Whatever.
Well,
who knows?
They imply a lot that they have pictures. So I don't know how that
feels. I don't know.
But whatever. It's disgusting.
I'm glad you brought up the Sesta thing, because I feel like a lot of people are giving Stormy Daniels respect right now, as they should be. A lot of liberals, especially. And that's a good thing for sex workers in general. And I hope that they extend that same respect to all of the not famous sex workers who are going to be affected by these bills.
Right. And not to mention the victims of trafficking that they supposedly want to help.
Yep.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. Head into the fun half of the program. 646-257-3920. 646-257-3920 is the number if you want to be a part of this program. Ladies and gentlemen, this show exists because of our members. Our members make it possible. Nobody else makes it possible. Nobody.
They don't do a goddamn thing.
They don't do a damn thing. Sit at home and listen.
take.
Listen. So I want to thank our members and invite you to become one. Head over to jointhemajorityreport.com, become a member, and as a way of saying thank you, we say, here's more content. And thank you for supporting the free show. If you're one of those people who listen to the free show on a regular basis and you have the financial means to become a member, please do so. Also know that you, when you join the show at jointhemajorityreport.com, you are supporting other listeners who can't afford to listen but want the extra hours. I've heard from just this weekend two or three people. One person who works outside is working a minimum wage job, can't afford to become a member, doing their masonry apprenticeship. So I said, we worked out a deal with that person. Well, worked out a deal. Yes. You send some pictures of your stonework when you're done. That's what I said, basically.
That's cool.
Talk to you about tools.
Exactly.
Pretend that I understand woodworking and you get a free show.
But we have other people, too, who are taking care of sick family members, or they've lost their job, or they've become sick. If you are one of those people, send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. You want the free show, the fun half of the show. Let us know. We'll work out a deal with you. Have patience, because sometimes it takes a while to get to the emails, but we will get there eventually. All right. Don't forget TMBS tomorrow night via iTunes or YouTube channel. And Jamie's Patreon at patreon.com/JamiePeck.
Just dropped a new one today. It's pretty hot.
Check it out, folks. It's getting crazy over there. All right, we'll see you in the fun half.
I give her my love, she says no. Says no, 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 no. 'Cause you're only a friend to me. Only a brother to me. She's a pretty little dog who says no.
The era of the pajama boy is over.
And what is Aleppo?
She shakes her head.
You know, I voted for the candidate who had a Green New Deal, so I feel proud of myself about that, because you're saying that that's a great way to get out of this. I agree.
Turning over the tables in the swamp.
I was simply trying to fix the culture in many ways.
She says you're only a friend to me.
Over me when you're sweating, they're moving.